अयोर्हरतीवाय पुंसाम् उद्यानस्तम् च यन्यसौ तस्यार्थे यक्षणो नीता उत्तमश्लोकवार्तया. Both by rising and by setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. Okay. I just want to go over yesterday's verse, the last verse, because remember that when Shonaka stood up, he started to speak about Marge Cricket, and he spoke about Sukadeva Goswami, and how they were great, and how they were equal, even though one was a king and one was a tyagi, a renunciate. They were equal because they were Vasudeva Parayan. And this verse said, Vyasa Kis Cha Bhagavan. Cha, he's also Bhagavan. Because the previous verse described Maharaj Cricket. So Vyasaki, or Sukadeva Goswami, he's also Bhagavan, full in transcendental knowledge. And Vasudeva Parayana. He's also a devotee of Krishna. That Krishna is the center of his life. He's also in the same mood. Just as Maharaj Cricket had described when he was a child, he was playing with dolls and imitating Krishna's pastimes. We saw the two commentators gave their opinion. One said that he heard the pastimes in Vrindavan because of the proximity. The other said because his family, Yudhisthira and everyone, they were worshipping deities of Krishna. So, he was such a great, he was Mahabhagavan, he's also Vasudeva Parayana. Also. So, this is an assembly of great devotees. Satam. Of the devotees. There's a great samagame. There's the present of these great devotees. Who are the principal people. Because there's so many scholars and saints that have assembled. But the speaker is a great devotee. He's Vasudeva Parayana. He's Sukadeva Goswami. And the listener is Maharaj Cricket. He's Mahabhagavat. So there must have been discussion of Krishna in this assembly of great devotees. And Prabhupada gives an interesting point. In Bhagavad Gita also, there's a talk between Lord and his devotee Arjuna. There could not be any other topic than Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga, however mundane scholars may speculate on in their own ways. I never saw this point before. I read this about 400 times. So it's such an interesting point that Prabhupada has made here. The Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna and there's Krishna. Krishna is God and Arjuna is his devotee. How can there be anything else but discussion? And this is the point that's being made here. Sue, there must have been, as a matter of fact, there must have been discussion of Krishna. So there must be discussion of Krishna. So this is his first attempt to get Sue to this. Please tell more about this story. Don't end here. Don't end here. And if you remember through the Bhagavatam, Shonaka Rishi, he's always comes up with these amazing verses about, you know, Krishna Katha, how they got tired of swaha, swaha, just their faces got black with the smoke. But Krishna Katha, they never become tired of. Vayam, Natu, Vatrityama. We never become tired. Uttama Shloka Vartate. Same word is here, in this verse here, Uttama Shloka Vartaya. We never become tired. Uttama shloka vartate. Yet shrinvatam. When we hear this, yet shrinvatam rasa jnanam. This knowledge of the affection between Krishna and his devotees. Swadu, swadu. Paday, paday. It's like sweet rice. Perfectly cooked. Again and again. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 cups. Again and again. We're taking this. So now in today's verse, he says, Ayar Harati Vai Pumsa. How great is Krishna Katha? That those who are engaged in Uttama Shloka, Bhartaya, in the topics of Krishna Katha, They're the only people that don't die. Everyone else is dying in this world. But those who accept the Tsrite, those who yachino nita, those who utilize their time in topics of Krishna, they don't die. So can you please speak some more about Harikatha so that we also can become free from death? Why only Maharaj Prickett should become free from death? We also should become free from death. Not only death, everything. Everything. Death is a symptom of the material infection. And all, everything. I was just lamenting because I had some medical problems. I was in pain. I had to take some painkillers and, you know. But I read Hari Das Thakur's chanting. When he was chanting, he didn't even feel the pain. He was getting so much nectar from the holy name. It said just like Prahlad Maharaj, even though he was tortured by his father, he felt no pain. I had slight experience one Kartik when I took a Nam Vrata. And I was chanting this holy name, Krishna. And I remember, you know, you get absorbed in your eternal identity. And then you begin to identify with that part of you which is eternal, which is the self. And you lose your fear of death. Because death only happens due to the desire to identify with the body because you want to be the enjoyer and the controller. Your consciousness is only reflected in the illusion that I'm this body due to your desire to be in the illusion that I'm not Krishna's devotee. So when you start to chant and hear and start to develop that desire to serve Krishna and to develop that desire to be his devotee, then you lose fear of death. So, death is a symptom of the material infection of the eternal living being. And the material infection is fruit of consciousness. I am the enjoyer. I am the controller. And due to that consciousness, one gets body. Due to that consciousness, one identifies with the body. And therefore, one suffers birth, death, disease, and old age. Due to the illusion that I'm the body. And therefore you suffer. Prabhupada gave the example that you're in a house and you have a very beautiful car outside and then you hear a crash and you go to the window. And then if it's your car, then you say, he hit me. And you suffer due to the identification. The other part, well, it's not my car. He doesn't suffer. So it's due to the identification that one suffers. So, the life of every man decreases who's in the illusion that I am the body. Except that man who utilizes his life to serve Krishna and identify with his eternal nature, the soul. So see how wonderful Krishna Katha is. It actually saves you from death. And therefore, the first thing that Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Prickett, if you want to be fearless at the time of death, then chant, hear, remember, and worship Krishna. You'll actually lose your fear. The greatest fear is the fear of death. That I will become non-existent. And we all have that fear because we're identifying with the body. But when we start identifying with the soul, we realize that the part that we, when you're chanting and hearing about Krishna, you realize that who you are, which you can identify with because what you're doing is serving Krishna. That's that part of you that serves Krishna, it never ends. But if you're the enjoyer and the controller and ego and distinction, then you're afraid because that thing is going to end. That identity is going to end, the identity of the soul. So we better identify with the soul by chanting and hearing about Krishna. And Prabhupada discusses in the purport the importance, therefore, of utilizing the human form of life to hearing about Krishna. Now, there's another point here that is brought out in the
purport that how effective this hearing about Krishna is, if it's done with sincerity. And even for a short time, Prabhupada gives two examples as a potent drug acts on the whole body. The injection of Harikatha acts on the whole consciousness. And he also explains, just as a part of a tree, when one part of the tree fructifies, the whole part of the tree is fructified. So just by hearing with attention and properly, the whole spiritual being awakens. And if one does that, then he is guaranteed eternal life. And the verse from the Bhagavad Gita is also quoted, 240, Neha Vikamanasho Sti Pratyavayo Navidyate Svalpam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahatobaya. In this endeavor, there's no loss of diminution in devotion. Even a small endeavor saves you from the greatest fear. It delivers you from the greatest fear. Even a small realization. And then Prabhupada goes on to quote Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. And he describes this guarantee, and he describes charity that's given. Even to a non-Brahmin, in your next life you get the same. And if you give the charity to a half-educated Brahmin, return double. The money is given to fully qualified 100 times. And if it's given to a Veda Paraga, one who is fully realized, it's returned in an unlimited degree. So there's guarantee that the money is returned. Similarly, a moment passed in association of the pure devotee by hearing and chanting the transcendental pastimes of the Lord is a perfect guarantee for eternal life, for turning back home, back to Godhead. So, who will not hear Krishna Katha? Any questions? Brother Dana? Questions, you're free to.
Tarava kim na jivanti, bastra kim na swasantyuta, nakadanti na mehanti, kim grame pashavo pare.
Do the trees not live? Just imagine the scene. He's talking to Sutta Goswami. Do the trees not live? Do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? All around us, do the beasts not eat and discharge semen? So this is also nice. He's saying, this is real life. Real life is Krishna Katha. This is real life. Not breathing or living like trees. This is real life. Trees also live. And people, they want, Prabhupada describes in the purport, how people want to prolong their lives. Like we know that Walt Disney is in suspended animation. They put him, you know, in the future. But what is that use? What is that life? Huh? They froze him. So in the future, if they find a cure, then he can come out and make more cartoons. So do the trees not live? Do they also live? And Prabhupada describes in Calcutta, in the botanical garden, there's a banyan tree said to be older than 500 years. In Vrindavan, there's a tamarind tree in Imlital, existed since the time of Lord Krishna. And Shankaracharya lived only 32 years. Lord Chaitanya only lived 48 years. Does it mean that the prolonged lives of the above-mentioned trees are more important than Shankara and Chaitanya? Prolonged life without spiritual value is not very important. Now, Prabhupada gives the progression of this verse. Well, one may doubt that trees have life because they do not breathe. And anyway, describes a scientist, Bose, who proved that there's life. But he said, the Bhagavatam says that the bellows of the blacksmith breathe. But does that mean that the bellows have life? And then the materialists argue that the life in the tree and man cannot be compared to the life in the tree, and the life in the man cannot be compared, because the tree cannot enjoy life by eating and sex life. In reply to this, the Bhagavatam asks, well, other animals, like the dogs and hogs living in the same village, do not eat? They also eat and enjoy sex life? Does this mean that that's life? So what is life? Life is Krishna Katha. So if you're not engaged in Krishna Katha, what is your life? What is your life? And what is our life? So can please continue to speak about Krishna Katha.
Swavibharahostakarai samstuta purusha pushu nayat karna patopeto jatu nama gadagraja.
Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from evils. So here's the point. Same point, actually. Without glorifying the Lord, men are like animals, pashu. And among them, the chief one is the biggest animal. So this is the famous dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. And Prabhupada, in the purport, he describes this. It's that he describes the different modern university education practice. So he said men are like that. You don't chant, you become like dog, hog, camels, and ass. He describes how. So the modern university education practically prepares one to acquire a dogish mentality with which to accept the service of a great master. After finishing a so-called education, the so-called educated persons move like dogs from door to door with application for some service. And mostly they are driven away informed of no vacancy. Pretty heavy. I'm just reading the market. I'm not being personal. We can all fit it into our own worldviews. There's a point being made. And hogs is eating everything. And camel is a kind of animal that takes pleasure in eating thorns. A person who wants to enjoy family life or the worldly life of the so-called enjoyment is compared to the camel. Look at that. Camel eats his own blood, and that's the taste. But he's suffering. Also, family life is described like that. There's so much suffering. To enjoy sex life is to suck one's own blood, and there's not much more to be explained in this connection. The camel also sucks its own blood while chewing thorny twigs. The thorns the camel eats cut the tongue of the camel, and so the blood begins to flow within the camel's mouth. The thorns mixed with the fresh blood create a taste for the foolish animal. So he enjoys the thorn-eating business with false pleasure. Similarly, the great business magnates, yes. Industrialists who work very hard to earn money by different ways and questionable means eat the thorny results of their actions mixed with their own blood. You can see this. I remember having compassion for my father, and he'd go to work at 5 a.m, you know, like an hour and a half. He'd work in Harlem. He had a dress factory, you know, make fashions or something. Loft. Very horrible place. And then come back at night, you know, and then like 6 o'clock, you know, like walking up the stairs, so exhausted. What a life. What a life. The ass is an animal who is celebrated as the greatest fool, even amongst the animals. The ass works very hard and carries burdens of the maximum weight without making profit for itself. So we saw that the ass has so many things. In Jiva Goswami, he gives a comment that this word karai, it says ass, but it's not just an ass, but it's a particular type of ass from Afghanistan that's particularly foolish. So It's, and he works without profit. And Prabhupada gives this footnote here, which is interesting, how people do altruistic work, but it's not dovetailed with God consciousness. And if it's not dovetailed with God consciousness, they don't get any benefit, or not much benefit. So you have to work for others, but also with your own welfare in mind by performing devotional service. So, and then he describes also the ass. The ass is generally engaged by the washerman, whose social position is not very much respectable. And the special qualification of the ass is that it is very much accustomed to being kicked by the opposite sex. When the ass begs for sexual intercourse, he is kicked by the fair sex, yet he still follows the female for such sexual pleasure. A henpecked man is compared, therefore, to an ass. The general mass of people work very hard, especially in the age of Kali. And he describes the rickshaw wallahs and laborers and factories. I remember just before I became a devotee, in the summer, I was working in a warehouse of a department store in inventory. It was very good, saving them a lot of money. So I was finding all things that they thought they were forgetting. And I remember the people that worked there, and I remember this one guy, he was working two jobs. He had an 8-hour shift, just a simple guy, and then he worked at night. And then he just collapsed with pneumonia one day. And just so many thoughts I have of people just working so hard for so little benefit. So Bhagavatam's categorization of the common man without any spiritual enlightenment into the society of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses is not at all an exaggeration. Or in other words, such godless leaders of dogs and hog-like men are bigger animals with the qualities of animals in greater proportion. Next verse. So, he's saying, if you're an animal if you're not engaged in self-realization. If you're not engaged in self-realization, then you die. And real life is Krishna Katha. Now, in the next 4 or 5 verses, he's going to start stating that not only the life, but even the parts of the body of such men are useless if they're not engaged in Krishna consciousness. The senses are meant for the service of Krishna. And if they're not used for Krishna's service, they become useless. But not only useless, they become detrimental. So he describes this.
Vilay patoru krama vikramanye nesinvata karna pute narasya jivasati dardu jivasati dar durike vasuta shachopakaya yuraghaya gatta.
One who has not listened to the messages about the prowess and marvelous acts of the personality of Godhead, and who has not sung or chanted loudly the worthy songs about the Lord, is considered to possess ear holes like the holes of snakes and a tongue like the tongue of a frog. So, plus, snakes have ear holes, but they're deaf. And the frog, what he does with his tongue is he croaks and he makes a loud sound. And the result of his talking, what's the value? The snake hears the frog and devours it. So if our ears are not engaged in Krishna Katha, then they have no value, like the ear holes on a snake. Belay, snake holes. And the tongue, like the tongue on a frog. In Prabhupada, the purport, he's describing how devotional service is rendered by all parts of the body. And therefore, it's transcendental. It's with the senses. The purified senses are engaged in Krishna's pleasure. There's a mistaken conception that there's no sense pleasure in Krishna consciousness. That you're not supposed to have sense pleasure. But we do have sense pleasure. But the consciousness is different. our sense pleasure is the pleasure of Krishna. The example I gave of someone who's cooking a feast for someone that he loves. And he makes all beautiful preparations and then feeds the person that he loves or cooks a feast for so many devotees. Then he eats the same prasadam and he tastes it and it's a wonderful taste and he tastes the sweet rice and how tasty it is and he relishes it, but his consciousness, the consciousness of the cook or the host, is he's thinking how much that person was pleased. So he has the same sense experience, but mixed with the feeling of love. So it's so much more relishable, the sense experience in the spiritual world. So there are senses, and they're meant to be utilized. Service to the Lord is completely purified use of the senses, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. So the senses are used, but they're used in a purified way. And therefore, one who is in devotional service, he's enjoying so much. His eyes, he looks on with love at the beautiful forms of the Lord. His ears, he's hearing the Krishna Katha. He's hearing the beautiful songs to the Lord. And when he hears them, he's thinking how much Krishna is pleased by this glorification of him. And Prabhupada discusses, disciple, spiritual master, they discuss with the senses. Krishna spoke to Arjuna with senses, and Arjuna received them with senses. And it was a perfectly logical understanding, using the senses to understand Krishna Katha. And Prabhupada also uses the word here. There's a word here that says asati, which is useless. And Prabhupada says asati means also a prostitute. The words are interesting. This is also never seen before. Read it 300, 400 times. Read the purport so many times. Something new. So I thought, well, how is sati a prostitute? Because sati means chaste. Asati means unchaste. So what's unchaste when you don't use yourself in the proper way? The woman is meant for the husband, not for all men. So our senses are meant for the glorification of Krishna, not for any nonsense. So it's asati. Asati. So if we're unchaste, our senses are unchaste. If they're simply after enjoyment for profit, with not any devotion or love. So the senses are meant for devotion or love.
Paraparam patta kariti jastam apyuttamangam nanamein makundam savau karono kurute sapariyam kankanava.
The upper portion of the body, though crowned with a silk turban, is only a heavy burden if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who can award mukti freedom. And the hands, though decorated with glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man, not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada discusses different classes of devotees. And the third class devotee is advised to worship the deity. And then Prabhupada says, if he does, he worships the deity, but by hearing. If you don't worship the deity combined with hearing, you won't realize the presence of the Lord in the deity. Anyway, and if one doesn't realize the presence of the Lord in the deity, then he won't respect, he won't bow down to the Supreme Lord. And then if you have opulence and you don't use that opulence in Krishna's service, if you have opulence but you're not a devotee, then that opulence will make you go to hell quicker. And the example is a man drowning. It's such a good thing. It says, it only burdens you. Like a man who's drowning, if he's drowning and you have a big, like, mukut and crown, you know, it only makes you go down faster. So if you have opulence and wealth and you're not using it in Krishna's service, if you have gold, the lady has so much gold and so much riches, but she's not cleaning the temple and serving the deity, then she's like, it's what the Prabhupada said. It's like, are like those of a dead man. Has no purpose, no value. Not only no value, it's a great burden. Now Prabhupada said, the common man who is puffed up with his material position and does not bow down before the deity of the Lord in the temple, or who defies temple worship without any knowledge of the science, must know that his so-called turban or crown will only succeed in further drowning him in the water of the ocean of material existence. A drowning man with a heavy weight on his head is sure to go down more swiftly than those who have no heavy weight. A foolish, puffed-up man defies the science of God and says that God has no meaning for him. When he is in the grip of God's law and is caught by some disease like cerebral thrombosis, that godless man sinks into the ocean of nescience by the weight of his material acquisition. Advancement of material science without God consciousness is a heavy load on the head of human society, and one must take heed of this great warning. Such a prophetic thing as we're facing the YK2 crisis. Prabhupada discusses King Prataparudra, how he was so... The idea is that an important man must accept the supremacy of the Supreme Lord.
Vahayate te nayane narayam lingani vishnur nirarikshito ye padavninam to dhruma janma bandho shetrani nanu vajito harayo.
The eyes which do not look at the symbolic representations of the personality of Godhead Vishnu, his form, name, quality, etc., are like those printed on the plumes of the peacock. And the legs which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered are considered to be like tree trunks. So the eyes are meant to look at the form of the Lord. It's like the eyes of the peacock have no value. So in this regard, Prabhupada's explaining how these verses actually indicate Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti means the conscious utilization of the senses in the service of the Lord for the purpose of getting bhava or devotion. That's the purpose of the senses. And therefore, Prabhupada explains how the householder especially should have deities in their home so that all their senses can be engaged in the service of the Lord. This is the purpose of deity worship, that our senses want taste, our senses want smell, our senses want sight. When you have established the deity, then your senses become satisfied in Krishna's service, decorating the deity, seeing the deity with love. It's so nice. I'm saying, you know, I'm in my room here chanting, and then about 10 o'clock, you know, the senses, you know, the sun's getting up, the passion comes, my senses want something, I'm in my room all day. You know, you go to the, I go to Prabhupada's Samadhi here, and then I go to the deities in the temple, you know, the senses become so satisfied in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada, you know, purport here, especially for household devotees, the path of deity worship is strongly recommended. As far as possible, every householder, by the direction of the spiritual master, may install deities, and he gives all the different forms. One's family should worship strictly following the directions and regulations of Archanaviti. Any member of the family who is above 12 years of age should be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, and all the members of the household should be engaged in the daily service of the Lord, beginning from morning, 4 a.m., till night, 10 p.m., by performing Mangal Artik, Niranjana, Archana, Puja, Kirtan, Shringara, Boga, Vaikali, Sandhya Artik, Pata, Boga at night, Shine, etc. Engagement in such worship of the deity under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master will greatly help the householder to purify their very existence and make rapid progress in spiritual knowledge. Simple theoretical book knowledge is not sufficient for a neophyte devotee. Book knowledge is theoretical, whereas the archana process is practical. Spiritual knowledge must be developed by a combination of theoretical and practical knowledge, and that is the guaranteed way for attainment of spiritual perfection. So the training of devotional service for neophyte devotee completely depends on the expert spiritual master knows how to lead disciple to make gradual progress towards the path back to Godhead. And therefore, Prabhupada quotes Sri Vigrahara Dhananitananda. That the Vigraha is worship in the home. And the guide or teacher teaches the neophyte how to worship. And this saves one, Prabhupada said. Only attention engaged in the service of the Lord, especially in dressing and decorating the temple, accompanied by musical kirtan and spiritual instructions from scriptures, can save the common men from the hellish cinema attractions and rubbish sex songs broadcast everywhere by radios. If one is unable to maintain a temple at home, he should go to another temple where all the above performances are regularly. It's essential for householders. That was my realization when I went on my little pilgrimage, living in different people's houses. Unless they really get into the deities, then Maya takes over. And you can see, you can see the real standard when you get to people like Jai Gaurasundara. But, you know, it just seems so natural, and they're all absorbed the whole day. Giri Govardhan, too, has such a standard of worship. Of course, there's other services, chanting, hearing, studying, different sadhana. But that's what Prabhupada wanted, at least that you'd live in a community where the deities were the center and people would naturally be engaged in sadhana bhakti. And then Prabhupada talked about the walking tendency is misused by visiting various places for sightseeing. So this walking tendency, it becomes like your legs are, if you don't move to the holy places, your legs are considered like the trunks on a tree. What are the legs on a tree? What is their value? So the moving tendency, you can see in America, they have that moving tendency. You have to go out, you have to see, you have to visit Epcot, Disneyland. You know, people have to go. Seven Adventures, you know. There's places with water slides and, you know, all kinds of places. Palisades Park, when I was young, I was thinking. The walking tendency. But you can see in India, the moving tendency. You know, you can go to Puri, Mayapur, Vrindavan, all the temples, Govardhan, Barsana, Nandagram, Pushpa Samadhi, the deities, the walking tendency, Gita Nagari. You can go to see Radha Damodar. I remember when I did that Kartik Vrata, how everybody would come every morning to the temple, you know, to... This is, otherwise, if that's not there in the home and the community, it's going to be used in so many other ways. You know, it's so difficult in America because America knows how to package sense gratification in the most attractive ways, personally suited to your own particular modes of nature. And it's so plentiful in the air and around. And therefore we see that devotees, they have a hard time making spiritual advancement because the modes just carry them away. That was my experience when I was traveling and staying in people's homes, especially in New York City. It's all packaged, the whole city is packaged for sense gratification to distract you. So how difficult it is. Therefore, I wanted that with Gita Nagari. That's why I went there, to help make a place of pilgrimage in America. So people can have that tendency for traveling, they can go to the holy place.
Jivan shavo bhagavatam grivenum najatu martyo bilabete yastu Sri Vishnu padya manujastu lasya swasan shavo yaste nuveda gandam.
The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. Prabhupada talked about ghosts. You know, the life air is gone. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of Tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. So, this is the first condition of devotional service, is to serve a devotee. This is what Prabhupada's concluding. Compared to if a man dies and he can have a ghost body. Someone who's not serving a devotee is like someone with a ghost body, haunted. And then Prabhupada also quotes also a very famous verse, Rahugana tattapasi niyati nichediya nirvapanagrihadva nachandasa naiva jalagni surya vinamahatpara rajobhisheka. This is by Jetta Bhart, the Maharaj Rahugana, that you cannot become perfect by tapasya, yati, by becoming a sannyasi or renunciate, nichedya, by worshipping the deity, nirvapanad grihadva, by becoming a perfect grihasa, nachandasa, by becoming a brahmachari or celibate, jalagni surya, by staying in the summer in the middle of a fire, or in the winter up to your neck in ice water, performing austerities. You cannot become purified unless one has the dust of the feet of a great devotee. So this is so perfect. This is like, this is what the purpose of life is. It's for Krishna Katha, and it's for glorifying Krishna. Shonaka Rishi saying, therefore glorify Krishna, please. And take shelter of a devotee. And finally, we have to do this quickly because we're almost out. Certainly that heart is steel frame which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eye and the hair stand on the end. So all these verses are about the senses and this isn't about the mind. So by the practice of Vaidhi Bhakti, of engaging your senses in Krishna's service, you don't actually change your heart and develop bhakti. And when you develop bhakti, then when you see Krishna, when you hear Krishna, the tears come to your eyes. If you haven't come to this point, then your heart is like a piece of steel, where the heart is supposed to be soft to invoke a mission. Therefore, Prabhupada said, vidhi bhakti, or regulated devotional service by the limbs of body, namely the eyes, the ears, the nose, the hands, and the legs, has already been explained here and before, is now stressed herein in relationship to the mind. So if your mind hasn't been filled with emotion, then what is the use of your life? What is the use of your heart? It's like steel frame. And then it actually quotes from the Sandarbhas. And I was just reading that quote yesterday. If reaction does not take place, it's considered, and it means it's due to offenses. If this kind of emotion doesn't take place. And the conclusion is, O Suta Goswami, your words are pleasing to our minds. Please, therefore, explain this to us as it was spoken by the great devotee Sukadeva Goswami, who is very expert in transcendental knowledge and who spoke to Maharaj Prickett upon being asked. Purport. Knowledge explained by the previous chari like Sukadeva Goswami and followed by the next by Sutta is always transcendental and therefore penetrating and useful to all submissive students. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the second canto, third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Pure Devotional Service, the Change in the Heart.